Welcome to Literature Out Loud, sponsored by Rune, the Robert Morris University Literary Magazine, and by RMU Radio and TV. I'm John Lawson. Joining me today are RMU English major and managing editor of Rune, Savannah Buhite, and our guest, poet, fiction writer, and essayist, Paola Corso. Welcome, Paola and Savannah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paola Corso lives in New York. She is the author of 6 books of fiction and poetry set in her native Pittsburgh. Most recently, The Laundress Catches Her Breath, winner of the Tilly Olson Award for Creative Writing from the Working Class Studies Association. Paola, I'm so glad to meet you, and I'm really glad we got you out here to Robert Morris to record for Literature Out Loud.
Thanks so much, and I'm so happy to be back in Pittsburgh for a visit.
I know that you write in many genres, but since April is Poetry Month, maybe you'd kick us off with a recent poem.
Yes, my Italian grandmother, whenever she passed by a church, she would make the sign of the cross. And when I'm lucky enough to be in Pittsburgh and see the rivers, I like to make the sign of the confluence in the name of the Allegheny and of the Monongahela and the Holy Ohio. Amen. I'm going to begin with a river poem. 1. The river from a distance is not the same as the river up close. In this dream, I find myself walking toward the bank, soupy with algae and slime, but I dive straight over, my projectile suspended in the mist until I reach a clear swirl of water, my arms an arrow spearing crystal that cracks into 1,000 pieces. Each one a reflection of me for when I don't want to see anything but my own vision of what is to be. 2. The river up close is not the same as the river from a distance. In this life, I find myself walking away from the bank, clumps of leaves caught between my toes, the smell of fish and worm baiting my skin. Wetness hardening, settling into my joints so that every move dries stiff and brittle enough to snap off a finger or toe. A limb, if I'm not careful, as I crawl up the rocky bank that scrapes away edges of my life. Pieces of dirt rolling back into the river, into stillness earthed. A current saved up. The pause of so many days waiting with abandon.
That was Paola Corso reading her poem, Proximity.
Paola, as a young writer myself, I'd be interested in hearing about starting your writing career. How do you balance all the practical parts of your life with your life as a poet?
I began with journalism jobs after college, and then I was working for a daily paper, and then I took a class with the creative nonfiction guru, Lee Gutkin, at the University of Pittsburgh. And he said to me, and he said to the class, do you, as journalism writers, daily newspaper writers, do you want your writing to line a birdcage the next day? Or do you want your writing to have some staying power? So that really struck me, and I thought, I am going to try to write something that has more endurance. And I started writing theater and fiction and poetry, writing in various genres. And as far as balancing my life as a writer and as a mother and a worker, I turned to poetry. When I had a baby late in life, I realized that I could barely, get dressed in the morning and take a shower, let alone finish my 400-page novel. So I started to write short. I saw my time on the subway as my mobile writing workshop. I wasn't at home with a baby. I wasn't yet with my students. And I brought a little pocket notebook, and I started jotting down my thoughts and ideas. And I began writing in the short form, and that's allowed me to continue to be a writer and not give up writing. So maybe I'll read a piece from this period of new motherhood and making an adjustment. and this piece is called Expressed. My father drove 382 miles from Pittsburgh to Brooklyn and didn't find a parking space. His welcoming was a $60 ticket and sticky sap all over his windshield from the sycamores on our tree-lined street. We moved the car to a legal spot, then took a taxi to Home Depot to buy light fixtures and to Home Depot again for a toilet seat because I couldn't leave a nursing baby for longer than a few hours at a time. After my father hung the ceiling light, he picked up operating instructions for a Purely Yours breast pump. I sat at the kitchen table with my nursing bra flaps down, exposing breasts hard and engorged, while he rigged tubing to the machine, set the dial, and handed me the suction cup. When my milk began to sputter into the bottle, he winked and left me with a pitcher of water to drink as I expressed one breast at a time in calibrated dribs and drabs. The room grew dark, but he came back to switch on the ceiling fixture he had just installed. And in his light, my eyes gradually began to adjust to the bold pattern of the newly hung wallpaper, to the full bottle of milk in front of me, waiting to see my cream rise to the top in the freezer before the faint tint of blue.
Wow. I love your father's wink in that.
So helpful as I was struggling with new motherhood and trying to regain my identity as a writer.
Yeah. You're listening to Literature Out Loud. That was my guest, Paola Corso, reading her poem, Expressed. I know you're from Pittsburgh. When and why did you leave us? And how has Pittsburgh figured into your writing?
I haven't left just once. I've left and returned three times. I've been to Boston and San Francisco and Denver and New York City, where I currently live again. But I have to say that Pittsburgh is my home. It's my emotional center. It always will be. A critic once said, you know, you can take Paola Corso out of Pittsburgh, but you can't take Pittsburgh out of Paola Corso. And I very much agree with her. Everything I write from Brooklyn is about Pittsburgh and about my Italian-American family, about the work in the steel mills that my father and grandfather did, about the working class nature of this city. So that's what I write about, and I thank living in Brooklyn for that, having a little distance, having a little perspective, looking back at where I grew up, and not a sentimental approach to this, because we have many wonderful things in this city, but you know, there's still some air pollution, and there's still some things that we want to make better about our city. So I have this poem here called "The Doctor Makes His Diagnosis," and I refer to the Swiss doctor who coined the word nostalgia in his medical thesis. This was in 1688, and he actually identified the symptoms, which I read many of them. They're in that language of 1688, as well as what's the cure for being homesick. Okay, this is called "The Doctor Makes His Diagnosis." I have two cities, but only one home that is my mother's womb, with one long umbilical cord that reaches across thousands of frequent flyer miles. I have two apartments and one window filled with pleats of light and a sooty curtain that, no matter the color, is a checkered gray. I have an abiding devotion to my birthplace. So when I go back to Pittsburgh, I'm stupida for living in Brooklyn. And when I'm living in Brooklyn, I'm mad with longing. I have an afflicted imagination that incapacitates my body, causing nausea, loss of appetite, high fever, pathological changes in the lungs, brain inflammation, and cardiac arrest. I have a lifeless and haggard countenance, an idleness conducive to daydreaming about thick village milk and iron city beer, about the sounds of bagpipes and terrible towels whipping in stadium winds. I have 3 college degrees and 7 bookcases, but rely solely on associationist magic. When I climb the stairs to the torch of the Statue of Liberty, I imagine being at the top of an idle factory smokestack. I have a highly contagious disease, but curable if you purge my stomach, endorse torture and pain. I can be ridiculed, laughed out of my homesickness, unless you see me as a working-class woman who does a white-collar job with blue-collar hands.
The sickness of nostalgia, I love it. Yes. That was Paola Corso reading The Doctor Makes His Diagnosis.
Paola, how has your writing changed over the years? Who were your early influences? Do you have certain themes or approaches to writing that have remained the same over time, such as the Pittsburgh theme that you have shown us just now?
Yes. Let me start by saying early influences. I think I could go back absolutely to college. And I was a sociology major, but my boyfriend was an English major, and he said, "You gotta take Professor Mahoney for English Romantic Poetry." And I really wasn't inclined to do so, but since he felt so strongly that this is what I needed to do, I took that class. And I have to say, I think it set the stage for me for life, reading the English Romantic poets. And remembering lines like, "Glut thy sorrow on a morning rose," and hearing my professor say this, it really underscored for me that life is both misery and at the same time it's beauty, and we just have to find that beauty as we make our way through life. So I want to read a poem that tries to see the duality of life. And this is a poem called The Spanish Steps in Rome, Italy. Didn't we stand there once in the eternal city? The steps connecting the piazza at the top with the one at the base. A fountain and a wish below. A church and a prayer above. Didn't you gaze into twin bell towers and pray for good health after you saw John Keats's name on a house beside the steps where the poet lived, where he died at the age of 25? And didn't I see the fountain shaped like a half-sunken ship with water overflowing its bows, toss my coin, make a wish, to be Audrey Hepburn on Roman holiday, riding a Vespa with Gregory Peck to the steps, licking a scoop of gelato? And was that not our moment of innocence and experience, inseparable as they are, as we were climbing those stairs, climbing in both directions?
You're listening to Literature Out Loud. That was my guest, Paola Corso, reading The Spanish Steps in Rome, Italy. Paola, Savannah asked you about your early influences. What are you reading now? How's your time in New York changed your perspective as a writer?
Okay. I like going to different websites, and you know, I do read some poets, their work, but I like going and getting, scanning and seeing who's out there. And a couple of the websites that I religiously read, one is called Brevity, and that's a flash creative nonfiction website. Another is Poetry Daily. So that I read both prose and poetry, and my time in New York has changed my perspective in that I see the diversity that our city offers, and I look back on Pittsburgh, and I continue to write about Pittsburgh, my ethnicity. I continue to embrace my Italian-American background, as I said, along with class and place. And in New York, I've branched out and saw that, you know, there's a rich history there as well for labor history, and discovered the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, for one. Immigrants, Italian, Jewish, many of them girls, lost their lives in a fire in sweatshop conditions. So being a poet of witness to my own family's working conditions has led me to also see, you know, in other cities, and now globally, I've written about Bangladesh and the collapse there of the garment building. So it continues on, and it's always an ongoing process of what we need to witness.
Paola, I've seen you described as a literary activist. Now, what does that mean?
Using your words for creating community. I think more than ever now, I want to be part of a community. I don't want to feel isolated in this very divisive political scene that we have now in this country. And I think writers are coming together and say, what can we do with our skills to help create community? And that's very important to me, and a sense of social participation, if not justice. Of course, we're striving for that. So I co-founded this project called Step in Stanzas, and our goal is to celebrate the city steps in Pittsburgh, because it celebrates our rich, unusual terrain. It celebrates our ethnic diversity, all these neighborhoods with different cultures. So it brings a lot together. And so we performed at the Step Track last year, and it was a wonderful experience reading there to the audience of those who were making their way along the paths. And this year what I'd like to do, which gets back to this social justice, we want to create an immigrant project this year. I'd like immigrants, recent immigrants to this city, to join us on those steps with their stories that really debunk stereotypes that are being perpetuated out there, with their music and their art and their dance, so that we can celebrate together again these steps, our city that we all share and own together. So I want to read one last poem.
Please.
That is another step poem, and this is a light poem. It's very Pittsburgh, because I began by writing about Pittsburgh city steps. And then, as I said, I've branched out and written about steps all over the world at this point. But this one are the Mission Street steps in the South Slopes in Pittsburgh. And this is based on an oral history that I did there of a neighbor. My neighbor, he leaves Baltimore Flats for Pittsburgh Hills and climbs his first set of stairs on Mission Street. Says he doesn't get all the way up, but high enough to be in Alice in Wonderland, ducking under trees and finding a row of identical company houses from the old mine. He's high, all right, like a crow, peering out its nest to see where three rivers meet and bridges line up, where steps scale the hills every which way. In his own backyard's a pair near the garden I seen him dig up. His shovel hits brick. He scrapes off the dirt. Each has a company stamp from the factory that used to operate on the slope. He figures bricks are the foundation for the stairs in his backyard until one day he's tending the garden and the steps collapse. He puts down his hoe and walks over. Instead of bricks, he sees just what the steps are filled with where they buckled under. A heap of Pabst Blue Ribbon bottles. Now he's got this, "Geez, oh man, what the hell, you gotta be shitting me," look on his face. So I walk over to him and explain something, since he's new in town. "Joe," I says to him, "let me tell you a little something about Pittsburghers. From the Iron City mill honks when steel was big to the micro-brewing hipsters at Pitt and CMU. They may damn well run out of bricks on a sweaty day's job, but they will never, not in your life ever, run out of beer."
That was my guest, Paolo Corso, reading The Mission Street Steps in the South Slopes, Pittsburgh. So, Paolo, you've talked about Steppin' Stanzas and your hope for that immigrant project.
Yes.
Any idea when that might happen? Or?
Well, we're in the works now. We're trying to find some immigrants who would like to share their stories with us. Very eager to do that, and then to take it from there and collaborate together on the creative process and hopefully perform again many times on the steps in the coming months.
Anything else you'd like to mention? You got any books coming out or?
I'm really embedded in this step project right now, and I'm forming a new body of work. I'm sure at some point something new will be coming out.
Okay, well, let us know. Yeah, come back and see us when that happens. Thanks to my guest, Paolo Corso, and to my co-host, Savannah Buhite. You've been listening to Literature Out Loud, sponsored by Roon, the Robert Morris University Literary Magazine, and by RMU Radio and TV. Thanks to our engineer, John Rowland, and to Michael DeLauro, head of the Academic Media Center. Happy Poetry Month to all, and thanks for listening.